month, which is sitting next to me. She always gets to places ahead of me. I can't care. So those are my random thoughts.
Good. Right. Okay.
Some kind of
very good. It triggered your first bit about the doublings. Triggered a thought. So we think about, you know, the Wembley Stadium example. Think about this. Half of all the oil ever burned in all of human history has been burned during the lifetime of a 22-year-old. But the doubling time, if we want to continue to increase that by 3% per year, it means that in the future, you know, it'll shrink, and then the next half will be burned during the lifetime of somebody who's only 18, right? And two halves make a whole. It's gone, right? That's why it's really critical that we understand, you know, that I'm using exponential as a shorthand. It's actually mathematically incorrect. A lot of these things are not exactly exponential, but it's just a way to talk about this material. And I know that I've done a disservice to the finer points of math and all of this, but I want to tell it in a way that has the most relevance for people who aren't necessarily, you know, fully up on their math at this point. So the question for me is always, how far do you go with a story? You know, stop me when I've said enough so that we can get to that next part. You know, and so that's what I've been trying to do in my work, is shorthand this down enough so that we can, you know, get it and hold it and get to that next stage, which is, what do we do with this?
Exactly.
Right? As I look at this, and I, you know, my disconnect is that there's this enormous sense of urgency I have when I look at this compared to what I see going on at the official levels. That disconnect grows on a yearly basis. And my experience has been that more and more and more people are experiencing that way. And so transition springs up, and there are initiatives like that starting all over the place, some named, some not, because people have said, can't wait, you know? And they have this sense of cognitive dissonance, like, I'm seeing all this stuff happening, but they're saying that, and it's just too hard, and eventually that becomes too much attention, and so off they go to do stuff. And I think politicians are really missing out on something very
That's
large
right.
here. At least the opportunity to have a dialogue with these movements to see where they're going. And in my country, it's just this close to going bad, because what it sprang into is this thing called the Tea Party movement, which is really just a very large expression of people who say, I don't like that story. And if you've seen them characterized as this or that, the media is doing a huge disservice. This is an enormous pool, very heterogeneous pool of people who are just fundamentally unhappy with the current story. So the media goes in and finds some fringe elements and tries to paint the story that way, but really they're scared to death. Because the Tea Party won the most recent Gallup poll when they said, which party would you vote for, independent of actual candidates? And the Tea Party won by a lot. Second was Democrats, third Republicans, fourth Libertarians.
What is the Tea Party?
Nobody really knows, but it's a very large organization of people who are very unhappy about the way things are going, and they just had a big convention and Sarah Palin talked, and that's just, it's a mess. But
is it more Republican aligned than Democrats, my understanding from press effort over here?
Yes, I would think there would be more Libertarians and Independents
yeah,
and Republicans in there than
Sway. Yeah. It's kind of against George Bush, let's take over the world, neocon styles, let's burn all the oil, and also against the kind of the government will look after you and take you away in the process.
So they're nothing to do with transition then. The tea has nothing to do with it. Right. So is there any local community development in the US?
Yes, there's a number of things that have sprung up. Transition is sprung up all over the place.
All right.
We have something called Business Alliance for Local Living Economy, BALI. And they've started to stitch together small businesses, because small businesses have felt they have the least agency in this story. They're very cash flow dependent. They often don't have the opportunity to stick their heads up and do the big corporate thinking. So BALI has started to stitch them together into networks in response to how they can sort of pool their resources. And it's all about this concept of relocalization as a part of that story. Like, how do we actually, we know that eventually one of the narratives is we're not going to be, our supply chains are going to shrink. And the question is, you know, we don't actually have a lot of local supply for things. So how do we start to build resilience in that function?
Great, okay.
On that,
a lot
to say that the Minister for Energy and Climate Change did come along to our last transition conference to come in as a keynote listener, actually.
Keynote listener, I like that.
Okay, one, two, and three. Okay.
Chris, you mentioned the term sustainable enterprise and organization community crops up a lot of world indeed in this area. And you know, it occurs to me, some of the conversations more than the business league. there have been sustainable organisations around thousands of years. Most of the religions or philosophies. And it seems to me you get very quickly into this space around what you believe humanity is and humans are. And you know, this process we're engaged in at the moment is highly intellectual. There are a whole series of presuppositions and predicates or presuppositions about what we believe humans to be as we even engage in this process here. And I'm intrigued by the sort of vision thing that you declared earlier on, sort of almost more of a philosophical, almost religious, with a small R, in that perspective. And I think in the work that I'm doing, again, you bump into cognitive dissonance, the splitting that humans are wont to do around my problems of projecting them out there. Can you say something about that? I mean, twofold, I'm interested in your actual personal thinkings around that and the way you live and how that can be woven into this space, because without some shared sense of what humanity is, it seems to me you keep bumping up against these intractable challenges.
Before you answer, Chris, I'm suddenly aware of the time, and I want to ask permission to carry on for another 10 minutes. Those of you who have to leave because you've got trains or other meetings, please feel free to do so. But those of you who can stay for another 10 minutes, then we'll just take the last three questions. So,
So I think the part of that story that's made the most sense to me is around redefining prosperity. Right. It's getting the sense of, I think we've been in a bubble for a while pursuing the things we've been pursuing, maybe without a huge amount of self-inquiry around that process, because it was such a complete story we were telling ourselves. And the story goes like this. You know, you can tell how prosperous somebody is by how much money they have. How interesting are they? How sexy are they? All kinds of ways we talk about, you know, how fascinated are we with these people? I don't know how much they have, right? That's part of our story. And my story is thinking about how do we move other things into that circle with money. So let's redefine prosperity. What's really important, right? That's the story we have to start talking about. I'm prosperous when I have my health. You learn that when you lose it, right? I'm prosperous when I have deep relationships that are actually meaningful. I have a job with a lot of purpose in it. I'm happy. Oh, I have peace and security. These are all actually important elements to me that often I think get excluded from that story. So we move them back into the story. We say, well, how do we really go and get those? Because in our pursuit of this thing, if we go status quo, there's a very high chance we're going to miss a lot of this stuff. So which other direction? Because if we really want that stuff, how do we get that? And so we have to have a discussion first. Is that important? Yes, I would like to have that stuff. I personally will be exceptionally disappointed with myself if I can't change the story in time to prevent my children going off into a resource war with China. That'll be a really bad moment for me if that happens, right? So that's why that's a motivator for me. I'm trying to change the story because I think the status quo story ends in that somewhere down that line to what you're studying. Study well. And so how do we go about redefining prosperity then?
Yeah.
And redefining what our real goals are and what's really important to us and what our values are. There's all kinds of things that come into that story rather suddenly. The interesting thing is I think people are actually willing to have that discussion. It's just it hasn't been okay to have it up to now, but it's starting to be okay. And so the question then is, how do we make it even more okay to have that story told and have that discussion? So I don't know the answer to that yet.
I think people think more about these, what is life about in recessions and depressions than they do kind of at the start, I guess. It's
very likely, yeah.
Grabbing that while you have the chance.
Yeah, there's an opportunity.
To say, look, keep this thing.
Absolutely.
Good.
Just want to come back onto local currencies, I don't mind. Where we've got, say, for instance, no one takes any notice, let's just pick up the desk. No one takes any notice of anything that you say, anything that we say, and everything carries on, everyone's watching EastEnders, etc., etc. We're going to get to a point where we get to blackouts. Then people will start taking notice. There's no two ways about that. The only way people can actually grip the vast problem that is possibly facing us is basically, you know, you get sort of like non-smoking days. The media have to take a natural grip of this subject firstly, and then people have to switch off literally everything. For one day, they instead of watching TV, they play Scrabble, they play Monopoly, they play whatever. The thing I want to get back to is when it comes to local currencies, is you said sort of like think about the Ithaca Hour, and the one you said that was in Japan, for instance, looking after old folks. We've got an age wave coming up, and with all respect to anyone who's of a certain vintage, if you don't mind me saying, there's going to be a problem for people, I'm not going to say of my generation, but of sort of like between the 20 and 30s they come through. Now, we've had the internet open for 10 years, roughly, that's what it's come about. And since then, idiots like me have been able to find out about Austrian economics, Keynesian economics, the energy wave. This is going to compound very, very quickly. Now, we're going to get to a point where, at the moment, precious metals are going to be the sort of like the main commodity. So what I'm getting at is how would the IMF, how would the governments of this country basically prevent people from using old coinage?
For
the Caesar salad that have been...
They can prevent it by passing laws against it. So the IMF actually, if you want to stand up the currency, the IMF has only two rules. It has to be debt-based, and you may not back it with gold. Literally. Those are the two rules. So they're very explicit about this, because gold backing for a debt-based currency fundamentally doesn't work. So they were very clear about making sure that that was the case. The interesting part of that story, though, is that if that's really true, why do the central banks still have so much of it?
Yeah.
One might wonder. I'm a huge fan of listening to what people, not so much what people say, but what they do. Right, so here's an exercise. I'll hold your hands up. Okay. We're going to clap your hands. When I say three, I want you to clap your hands. Okay, ready? One, two, three. All right, see? Often actions speak louder than words, right? So I see what's going on. I truly believe that you're going
to
have a very difficult time. What's that?
You had to think about that.
Yeah, no, I did. I think you're going to have a difficult time getting precious metals back into play because it's a tough road to really go down because they're really reviled in the system. They don't work well in the current system.
But what about sort of like even if it's I mean, you think about sort of like colonial scripts, for instance, when you come back to the Tea Party, if you don't
right.
know what you're saying. I mean, you look at local currencies, you look at like, you know, I appreciate that Lewis Pound is backed by the actual pound, but what's stopping people from actually coming up their own currency?
Well,
even
nothing.
Going back to the Notch system.
Nothing. We had a couple of silver-based currency that the Treasury Department in my country just shut down because they found some technicality for it. It was legal, except they said it actually looked like it was counterfeiting legitimate coinage. Yeah, and it doesn't resemble anything remotely like any existing currency that was or is currently in place. So it was a weird thing. So that's tricky, but. When a money system breaks, you can guarantee that people will spontaneously generate new money systems. It'll happen. And there's all kinds of great ones out there that we can use that we know about. There's a WIR Prosvir system in Switzerland that's been running since 1938. It's a mutual credit system that businesses can use to trade with each other, completely independent of the franc. When the franc's having trouble, the businesses pile into this. When it's not, they pile back out. But they have a wetland system, if you will. In Switzerland that they can go back and forth to. We know about demurrage systems, which are money systems where it specifically loses value on a time base, which enforces a whole different set of behaviors, so very interesting, worth studying. We've got mutual credit exchanges. There's all kinds of things that can and should and probably would be done. But here's the one learning I've had I've spent a lot of time on alternative currencies or community currencies. Currencies require somebody to run them. We pay bankers a lot to do that for us currently. The problem is a lot of communities try and do it on a volunteer basis, and it's very hard to do. The Ithaca Hours you mentioned is on the basis of Paul Glover was the tireless champion, putting all of his unpaid energy into that for a long time to make it run. So if you have somebody like that, great, but to expect volunteers to step in and start to manage something like this, very difficult. You have to pay somebody. It has to be somebody's job. Because it takes time to get penetration into the marketplace. Inevitably, more of them pile up in one spot, and you have to help balance it out. There's work to be done. But it's too hard to do on a volunteer basis.
Right. I'm sorry for those who haven't had their questions answered, but it is 10 past, and we do have to vacate the room, I'm afraid. So please join me to thank Chris. I think we've had a wonderful... I look forward to seeing you probably next week, I hope, on the 4th.
Very good.
Chris, thank you so much. It really has been wonderful. Thank you.